the DFO Rundown podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 116 of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger, along with Frank Saravalli, as we push into April. Frank, the final month of the season. The playoff race in the East is very tight for seedings. There's no race when it comes to who's getting in. We know the eight teams. The West, a little bit different. The LA Kings with a big win. They're injury riddled. They win in a shootout in Calgary. They get a point in Edmonton. You know, Vegas has an easier schedule, but you got to win those games. I think Vancouver is out. I think the Winnipeg Jets loss to the Maple Leafs last night puts them on the outside. I kind of see it down to nine teams in the West. And when you look at, you know, it's probably going to be five central teams, and I would think three. I guess there's a chance Vegas could knock out Dallas, but with all the games in hand, I don't think so. So who do you see today, Frank, on April 1st? The one team out of the nine who you think is on the outside looking in come April 29th?
Still Vegas. I mean, the math is pretty daunting. They have 13 games left, and they probably need to go something like 10-3, 9-4, something like that to get in. Not saying it's impossible, but they've got a lot of ground to make up, and the math just really isn't in their favor.
No, it's not. It's not very great at all. So I do want to start, though, with the LA Kings. And when we get into, we're getting into awards season now, and you look at people, and Todd McClellan, so one of his top four defensemen, Sean Walker, has been out basically the whole year. Drew Doughty's missed, he's only played 39 games. He's missed, you know, almost as many. Well, by the time the season's over, he'll have missed more than he's played, right? You throw in Mickey Anderson, another top four defenseman. Even Matt Roy's probably number four or number five. And there was so much talk about Daryl Sutter. Well, and the Flames have had no injuries. The Kings have had tons of injuries. And they're only, what, 6 points behind him. Should Todd McClellan be getting more push for the Jack Adams?
I think the answer is yes, but should he be the winner?
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. Like, you know, I think there's a number of guys that deserve consideration, just going through the list. And I think this is apropos of nothing, but one of my real complaints about the award is sometimes the teams that are the best teams, their coach gets overlooked because the whoever's voting looks at it and says, it's not a media award, by the way, the PHWA doesn't vote on that. You know, the group voting almost looks at it and says, well, their players are good. And I actually think back to the Avs and the start of their season. Yes, they had some injuries to start, but remember, like, in late October, early November, people were calling for Jared Bednar to be fired.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like another lifetime ago.
But he should be consideration for sure. Like,
why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't Andrew Brunette be in Florida? Like, he steps in maybe the most difficult position possible. Your team was undefeated, literally did not have a loss when everything blew up with the Chicago Blackhawks and their sexual assault cover up. Stan Bowman resigns in Chicago. Joel Quenneville in Florida gets fired. And all of a sudden, Andrew Brunette, who's never been an NHL head coach before, you're taking over an undefeated team with a ton of expectations.
Yeah. Gerard Gallant for the Rangers. I don't know how many people thought the Rangers would be, you know, they're going to be over 100-point team. For sure. And, you know, even Rod Brind'Amour, because if there is a team that's been, I don't know if there's a team that's been more consistent than the Carolina Hurricanes. And to me, as a coach, like, when you're good, Frank, you still have to coach guys, and you have to find ways to keep guys motivated all the time. And, you know, I talk to opposing coaches. The thing about Carolina is they're incredibly consistent in how they play. Like, their players buy into what Brind'Amour is selling all the time. Now we'll see if it transforms into playoff success. But in the regular season, it's like, man, shift after shift, the Hurricanes play exactly the way their coach wants them to play.
There's no team that embodies more of what their coach, his philosophy is, than Carolina. But I think we mentioned all these candidates, and I still think the runaway winner for me is Daryl Sutter. I don't think one coach has made a singular impact as great as Daryl Sutter has. And I think that's why he should win. You know, you think about that Calgary team and where they were the last few years, like, they were no good last year. Daryl Sutter comes in late. I think that was a huge benefit, you know, and talked to Brad Treliving about it earlier this week at the GM meetings. That run that they had last year to close out the season under Daryl Sutter was such a key for setting the tone for when they got back in the fall. They took off. I mean, look at their goals differential. Look at their goals against. Like, Daryl Sutter set out from the beginning of the season, we want to win the Jennings Trophy for fewest goals against. That's the only regular season trophy he cares about. The Carolina Hurricanes have a slight edge, but the Flames have played one fewer game. But still, I don't think any one singular coach has had a bigger, larger impact and turnaround over one season's time.
All right. Now, there are some interesting races. The one race that will be solved on the ice is the Rocket Richard. Auston Matthews became only the third player in the last decade to score 50 goals, joining Alex Ovechkin and Leon Draisaitl. Leon Draisaitl needs one more goal to do it again, and Ovechkin's got a chance to do it for the ninth time. He needs eight goals down the stretch to get 50 for a ninth time and tie Mike Bossy and Gretzky for the most. The Art Ross, they're going back and forth. Now, Matthews does have a few games, and he has a few extra games to play down the stretch, which definitely could benefit him. But then the Hart race, like, we're into April, Frank. And for the last few years, usually there'd be someone, I think this is the guy. And I'm not going to say it was a consensus, but there was kind of obvious one. I can't recall the last time that you get into the final month of the season and the Hart Trophy is wide open. Like, legitimately, Roman Josi should be getting consideration. He's going to score 100 points for the first time for a defenseman since 92, since Brian Leetch. And you can say Johnny Gaudreau. You can say Jonathan Huberdeau. You can say Auston Matthews. You know, it's hard to overlook Connor McDavid. And I think McDavid and Draisaitl might count, you know, probably hurt each other because they're 1-2 in scoring and they're so close. But there's a lot of guys, Frank, that are in this. And as a voter, like, I've been following it closely and looking at a lot of different stats. Like, this is one of the toughest heart votes that I can think of in a long time.
Probably have to include, like, there's a long list of guys. Like, I'd include Kaprizov in that conversation.
Yep.
What do you do from Colorado? Like, is it Rantanen? Is it Kadri? Do they cancel each other out? How do you feel about Shesterkin?
Yeah, he's another guy.
So who would get your vote today?
Well, when I looked at all the numbers, and so here's the thing that I see sometimes when people make their statistical stuff, they include 5-on-5, but they completely just, power play doesn't matter. And I'm like, why? Look at goals per minute. Your special teams are incredibly more important. And every team's best players get on the power play. So I just want to point that out. If you're a good power play player, that to me is not a negative, right? It's not a negative. But the one guy I had today, and it was very close in 1-2, I went with Jonathan Huberdeau because the gap between him and the guys around him on his team is larger than it is on some of the other teams. So if I'm going by the wording of the rule, I had Huberdeau but Roman Josi, Frank, if Roman Josi continues what he's doing, he might get my first place vote. Honestly, like, I think the final month, which is still a good, 15% of the season, it really matters a lot, right? Like, so you can't, what I'm saying today on April 1st could be different because, you know, 14 games out of 82 is a pretty big chunk still. So I had Huberdeau and Josi as my top two.
Yeah, I'm not prepared to give an answer. And that's not me hedging. It's I really don't know.
And yeah, me neither.
And I don't want to prejudge it either, because I want to give it some time to bake. Cause like you said, I think that was the best point. 14 out of 82 still left. Like,
yeah,
a lot can change. And people were looking at the Norris Trophy race as being a done deal. And in fact, the betting odds indicated it as such. And now Roman Josi has flipped that on its head.
Yeah. Kirill Kaprizov's a great one, Frank. He had an unreal month of March. You look at all the franchise records that he's setting there. And, you know, he's a player that, and it's only his second year in the league. And he is leading a team. So I go by the word of it. The one vote that we have nothing to do with, Frank, is I'm fascinated to see what the players vote this year for who's the most outstanding player.
Still going to be McDavid, isn't it?
Probably.
And I was thinking he's also not really getting enough heart love either. Like he's back this last 5-6 weeks again. He's been like right there.
Well, that's why his finish. But I do think because him and Draisaitl, right? Like he's 3 points up on Draisaitl. Like Draisaitl, Frank, is going to do something that's incredibly difficult. He's going to go 50-100, 50 goals, 100 points. That'll be the second time in his career. In the history of the game, like we talked about McDavid, there's 19 people that have scored 100 points 5 times. There's only 24 players who have scored 50-100 twice. Right? Like 50 and 100 is just a harder thing to do. Right? And so, you know, Matthews has a chance that he could join that club. Right?
You know what? I haven't heard one person yet mention Draisaitl in the conversation.
And I get it because there's McDavid and I understand that. And so he probably won't win. But I think because Draisaitl's season's so good that might impact McDavid for the heart. Might not be fair, but when you go by the wording of the rule, most valuable to your team.
Right. If you can't determine who's the most valuable to the team, how do they?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. How do they win the award league wide?
Yeah, it's a tough one. So.
And where do you come out on Shesterkin?
Well, you know what? His play recently, Frank, has dipped a little bit. And so that's why. But the numbers he's had, like New York gives up a ton. And I'm looking at the expected goals and everything like that. And I talked to a few of the goalie guys. And so they sent me some numbers. Like he is so significantly ahead, or he was 2 weeks ago, but even in a 2 week span. And that's why it's important to note how do the guys finish. I honestly think the month of April might decide who the Hart Trophy is. And that's why I said today I might have Huberto and Yossi. But I'm telling you, Frank, it's like if they're ranked 1, 2, 3, and 4, it's like separated by a decimal point. It's nobody to me is clearly ahead.
And maybe that's how it should be. Maybe it should be decided in April.
Yeah.
We've got a whole month of hockey to go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I love it that you don't have to submit your vote till the end of the regular season. That's how it should be.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's just fascinating. Even like the Rocket Richard one's fun to watch because it's just two guys, you know, and right now they're kind of playing on opposite nights. Draisaitl scores 49. Matthew scores 50. Now Draisaitl plays the Blues tonight. Can he match it? And, you know, and I like Draisaitl's honesty. Like, yeah, I'm watching him. Hey, Matthew's a great player. Of course I want to beat him. Like, of course he does. That doesn't mean he's a jerk. Like, Matthews wants to win, too. Like, they're prideful players. And trust me, as much as they want to win, their teammates want them to win that award. Right? So, 100%. You know, you look at... And coaches aren't stupid. If... were you surprised? Of course Matthews is out for the empty net last night. And Draisaitl will be the same thing. Like, coaches... Everybody around that, like, players players are just as much of fans of the game as fans are. They're going to be watching very closely. They know what's going on.
People cheese on empty net goals. And I'm like, you have to have the trust of your coach to be out there in the last minute or two to even score it. So they're not just throwing anyone out there to do it.
Yeah. The big thing though, Frank, honestly, like I'm a big, as you know, I love looking up numbers and records. Like Ovi to get to 50 is a record. I wanted to tie Gretzky and Bossy because he got shortchanged. He's had the last two seasons that were shortened. And, you know, he would have got 50 definitely in 2020 for sure. So, you know, I really hope he can get there. Just like that's a monumental record. Like that's longevity of greatness to do something like
and that. And he still can get there.
Oh, yeah. He needs eight goals down the stretch.
Honestly, it sounds funny to say, but he could still catch Matthews and Draisaitl. And you might probably look at me and you go, what's wrong with you thinking that? His start of this season, this isn't like 5 seasons ago. This season, he had 20 goals in 19 games.
Yeah.
To think that he can get it again, it's you'd never count that guy out. He's a machine.
Oh, he's a fantastic goal scorer. He loves to score goals. There's no question. I do want to ask you, Frank, for fun, because we know the East and we know who's in. When you look at playoff matchups, if you got to have your perfect 4 matchups in the East, because we know who the teams are, who do you want to see in the first round of the NHL playoffs in the Eastern Conference?
Okay, well, there's a lot of layers to this. Are we talking best hockey? Are we talking best drama? Are we talking best chaos?
Well, that could be a combination of all three. The four matchups that Frank Saravalli wants that are plausible, right? Like you can't have Carolina, Florida, obviously. You know what I mean?
Right. So I would say... give me Toronto, Boston, and shoot that into my veins.
Okay.
Florida, Tampa.
Yes.
Although, yes, that would have
to take place. No, that can happen. That could easily happen.
That would have to take place if the other was to happen. Then you've got Pitt, Rangers, and Carolina, Washington.
Yeah, see, ideally, I'd like, and it's not plausible, unfortunately, at Pittsburgh, Washington, because Crosby, Ovechkin is just, you know, a great storyline. But I think those four, ideally, and there's a chance it can happen, and I really would like that to happen. The one match, the team that intrigues me the most here, and we've talked about it, is Shesterkin and the New York Rangers. Because, you know, Pittsburgh had that one stretch, Frank, what they go, like 15-1 or something like that. They were unreal at that point. And the Rangers have been pretty consistent all year long. And like Shesterkin to me is the biggest wild card in the East because they've relied on him. And that's why he's in the heart. They've relied on him a ton. If he can do it in the playoffs, Frank, they have a chance, the Rangers, to surprise a few teams. It's just, can he do it in the playoffs? Like, can you consistently rely on a goalie that much and go deep?
Yeah, I'm not sold. I just think in a 7-game series, I think Carolina would overwhelm them in the second round.
Yeah. Wow.
Hey, well, so Carolina. What about the West, though? Like, let's go through the same exercise. Give me your four matchups.
The four that I would like, Colorado. God, Daryl Sutter makes me laugh. He just keeps pumping the tires of anybody who plays Colorado is just going to get crushed. So it's funny.
How about Colorado, Vegas? Like, how awesome would that be? Because everyone thinks that if Vegas can get in and be healthy, well, first off, in order to get in, they would have had to be playing well. So they'd be, trending in the right direction. But also everyone thinks the team is better than what their record may have indicated to this point. So could the Vegas Golden Knights put the fear of God into the Avs in the first round?
Is Robin Leonard healthy? That's the question.
I think I've made that clear, but apparently I'm not a doctor. So I know I'm not a doctor. So
I'm going to go with this, Frank. So it's going to be Colorado, Dallas. Calgary, Nashville is the series I want. Now, I know that Nashville could easily still catch the Blues, but I want Calgary, Nashville, because those are two big, heavy teams. It's Saros versus Markstrom. I'd really like that matchup, which leaves then Minnesota versus St. Louis. And, you know, you've got, is Husso going to be the guy? He's started 20 of the last 30 games for the Blues.
He's got to be the guy.
So, you know, you could be Fleury versus Husso. You know, you've got, you know, kind of Kaprizov, a young guy. Is Husso legit or not? And then it would be Edmonton versus LA. That hasn't happened in 30 years. There's not really a rivalry there, unfortunately. I just hope that Drew Doughty and I talked to Luke Robitaille the other day. They believe that he'll be ready by playoffs, which obviously would be a big boost. And, you would have, I guess, the coaching angle of McClellan versus Woodcroft.
Interesting. I would just love to see Avs Vegas.
Yeah.
Plus yeah, Dallas missed the playoffs last year and Colorado got knocked out and McKinnon was upset. And I don't know. I just think there'd be so much drama to that. I root for chaos. Hockey, but I also think Avs Vegas could be good hockey.
No, I would agree with you. I think it's really hard. I think Vegas is tough. Dallas's games in hand are going to be a big benefit to them. So we'll see. Can the Vancouver Canucks play spoiler? Because they play Vegas now three times, I think, in the first 12 days this month. And the Canucks, we ruled them out, Frank. We ruled them out of the playoffs, kind of like in a political race when someone declares the winner. Well, we're declaring Vancouver and Winnipeg out of the Western Conference playoff races. Sorry, Canucks fans. Sorry, Jets fans. But the two recent losses just put you too far out. With the Vancouver has to go 11-2 to get to 95 points. That's not happening. So, Frank, a guy that now they're not in the playoffs, but the Ottawa Senators are a team that is a rebuild. Are they ever going to come out of the rebuild? And of course, the unfortunate passing of their owner Eugene Melnyk, former NHLer Mark Methot is going to join us now on the DFO Rundown.
Our next guest played in 624 National Hockey League games, including some for his hometown Ottawa Senators, as well as the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Dallas Stars. He played on one of the best junior hockey teams of all time with the London Knights. And he's recently, somewhat recently, switched over to the dark side, doing some media work with both TSN as well as the Wally and Mathot show. You can get that wherever you get your podcasts. Wally and Mathot do a great job with their show, covering all things Ottawa Senators and the NHL at large. He is Mark Mathot. Welcome to the DFO Rundown. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. That was a great intro. Wally doesn't do that for me. So anyway, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, no, pleasure to have you. And I think, you know, we could pick your brain on all sorts of subjects. And I'd love to dive in and talk about that London Knights team at some point. But I think we have to start here with the news surrounding the Ottawa Senators franchise this week and their owner and Eugene Melnyk passing away earlier in the week. Kind of a surprise to some that may not have known it, actually, including the National Hockey League itself. Had a chance to connect with some league executives at the GM meetings this week. And they said, we didn't really get a sense of how bad the situation was, how dire it was until really a week or two ago. And so this news catches a lot of people in the hockey community by surprise. What are your thoughts? What are your remembrances of Eugene Melnyk?
Yeah. And you know, I never really released any statements or anything like that, because I know a lot of media people were trying to kind of put in the right words. And he had a polarizing presence here in Ottawa, as everybody knows. But I mean, he didn't lack passion. That was one thing that Eugene never lacked that of. And he was always wanted to win. I never had a ton of interactions with him, because during my tenure with the Ottawa Senators was when he was starting to battle cancer. He was diagnosed, and he was a little bit more behind the scenes. So I never really had an opportunity to actually sit down and chat with him. But, you know, I knew how much he cared about the Ottawa Senators, and really for him, it wasn't just, you know, a business. It was a pride thing. And he certainly took it very seriously. And I know, his family was starting to get more involved. His daughters, as they were getting older, were starting to show face a little more around the dressing room. But yeah, I mean, anytime somebody passes, it's incredibly tragic. You have to think about how or who exactly it affects, and directly affects his younger daughters. They lose a father at a very young age of 62, which is tragic. So, you know, I think the best way to remember Eugene, for me at least, would be and being an Ottawa resident, would be just the fact that he was that guy that was able to revive the organization here and keep the Senators in town. So I'm incredibly grateful for that. I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunity to play for the Sens. You know, he was largely the reason that I was able to extend here in Ottawa my time and sign a new deal. So I'm grateful for that as well. But I mean, as I mentioned, he'll be remembered for a lot of things. I think people need to focus on the positives and understand that he's mainly and largely the reason the Ottawa Senators were able to stay in town.
Yeah, no doubt. Some bad, some good, but I don't think he necessarily gets enough credit for also purchasing that team and the debt load that they had way back in 2003 to help keep them in Ottawa. And there were a lot of fun years after that. How do you view this next, you know, series of years for the Sens? This is such an incredibly exciting time. I think this market, if there was some trepidation with ownership, is going to come alive a little bit in terms of support of the team. Not only that, but the product on the ice should continue to only get better and better. This team is seemingly right around the corner, knocking on the door. They're almost in a spot, Mark, where they've got almost too many prospects, if that makes any sense. Not all these guys are going to be able to make the team. So they're going to be in an interesting spot with, you know, cap space, prospects, and some bona fide NHLers that have really carved out some roles for themselves.
Yeah, they're at a critical point, because right now they've got all their pieces in place, right? You look at their core, and I'm not going to name drop all the players, but they've got all their young guys that they've brought up through draft picks that are very impactful players on this team now. So I think for me, if you're the organization, if your management, it comes down, like most situations, like most teams, focus on insulating these good young players with quality veterans. And that's always sort of been an issue. And there's been different theories out there with regards to, well, maybe they've been lacking true, legitimate free agents because of, you know, internal budgets, or maybe they've had their own team restraints as far as what they're willing to spend. But as far as I'm concerned, when I look at this group now, they're going to be looking at some hefty price tags moving forward. You've got some players now like Josh Norris, Tim Stützle on the horizon as well. And then, of course, looking even more forward, players like Jake Sanderson, who will need to sign over the next couple seasons. I'm assuming all these guys are going to be looking at some pretty hefty tags. And we're talking about a small market team. These aren't the Toronto Maple Leafs. So they're going to have some interesting moves to make. I think for me, this is their time, right? Like, to take that legitimate next step forward, to maybe to become a perennial playoff team, if you will, you have to have some legitimate guys to fill in here and help out. You look at the Leafs, you look at some of these other great teams around the NHL that have had a lot of success, at least regular season success over the past few years. You got to bring in some good vets. And that's always something that I'm big on. Finally, Ottawa has a little bit of stability, perhaps in goal with Anton Forsberg, who's starting to emerge. I think the team and the organization and the fan base is hoping that he'll cement himself as a true number one. I mean, he's been a bit of a journeyman up until this point. Finally, now at the age of 29, he's kind of coming into his prime. So goaltending has always been an issue. But I think for me, ultimately, you've got all the right pieces here. I'm not going to just give you some long-winded answer. They need to go out and find the right guys this summer. There's no rush per se, but you almost think the team's sort of taken a step back. I hate saying that. I think that the hope was that they'd be knocking on the door this year. I mean, you look now, they're behind a couple fairly rebuilding teams as well. You look at Buffalo, Detroit, some of these teams are ahead of them, and I don't think that was in the plan. So I'd like to be a calming voice for the Sens fan base right now, but to me, it's at a point now where there's a lot of pressure on the organization to make some big moves this summer.
And Mark, with that, and of course, with Eugene Melnyk's passing, there's the uncertainty of the ownership. And I understand that there's a lawsuit, surrounding it, and that until that's sorted out, you won't know. But there's been talk for a few years of a lot of other local owners, who are interested in this team. From an ownership perspective, how important is it, and how quickly do you think there's going to be a change, or do you think the Melnyk family will maintain ownership?
And I can only speculate. And obviously we're all reading a lot of different information that's out there that's coming at us, and it's coming at us pretty quickly. And certainly in light of his very recent passing, I hate speculating about this stuff, but it is a business and it has to keep going. I know his daughters, from my understanding, they're very interested. And I know that I shouldn't say no, but I'm pretty sure I know Eugene wanted to keep it somewhat within the family, or at least have some involvement from his daughters. I know that they've been very interested in that, but you're seeing a lot of different groups throw their hat in the ring right now. And there's no surprise. There's been interest from a lot of people now over the past few years, ever since the LeBreton Flats ideas here in Ottawa, as far as moving the location down to Ottawa, kind of came into fruition. A lot of people started becoming interested, a lot of groups. I've heard different things as far as, some retired players perhaps somewhat being interested. I know everyone's heard Daniel Alfredson being interested. And then you've got guys like Chris Phillips and Chris Neal, probably more as ambassador roles, of course. But for me, I think from a stability standpoint, I think, with Gary, we know you look at Phoenix right now, and I know this has already been floated out there. I'm going to repeat it. If Phoenix can make it work with a 5,000 in-person arena, the Ottawa Senators can make it work. And Gary has a soft spot for the Ottawa Senators. They're not going anywhere. At least I don't believe they are. I think if you're the ownership group at this point, you certainly have to be receptive to offers, and you have to hear people out. I'm sure there's going to be interest there. But as far as the day-to-day goes, I know Anthony LeBlanc will probably be seeing the day-to-day stuff right now with the Sens and how the business is run. But I think, like most people, Jay, like we can only speculate. We don't actually know. We don't have a crystal ball. They've been keeping those talks very private. There hasn't been a ton of leaks. So I like you guys, even though the fact that I'm in Ottawa, I can only speculate. At this point, I don't really have a clear cut idea.
And Mark, it's interesting you mentioned how maybe they took a little bit of a step back this year. And I've been a big believer for a while that, rebuilds really take sometimes 8 to 10 years when you look at it. And teams don't want to say that. They never really want to pronounce it. But when you go back and comb through the teams that did it, it takes that long. And I find the one consistent error is teams do what you said the Senators lack. They don't have enough veterans to help their young guys. It's great to have all these young guys come up, but young guys just don't, they're going to make more mistakes. Just a proven fact. Now, getting fourth line guys, like that's great to have them, but you need legit veterans in your top six and definitely in your top four on the blue line. So, it's hard for me to evaluate DJ Smith when I think sometimes he's going into a gunfight with a knife, right? It's not the coach's fault if you don't have the players, but Dorion and Smith, what do you think of their security as GM and coach past this season?
That's a tough call. And because they've just been extended, they've been given a little bit of security. We all know Pierre's been there for a long time now. He's been with the Ottawa Senators organization under Brian Murray initially with that tutelage. That helps big time. But I think they're probably going to be under the gun, realistically speaking. I mean, I don't want to be disingenuous. I don't want to just throw sling mud around. I do firmly believe, though, that the pressure is on. Like, let's be honest here. I think it'll be telling if they do have their jobs going into next season. You have to think that the leash is going to be fairly short, because at the end of the day, this is, you know, we're in the business of winning and you need some production. And whether you believe your fan, your, whether you believe your organization belongs in the postseason or not, I think it really comes down to just being competitive. I think at this point, after X amount of seasons and kind of having some ups and downs, fans just want to see more wins, right? That keeps them into the building. You want to be in contention past Christmas. You know, gone are the days where you're perhaps competitive up until, you know, the beginning of December. And then all of a sudden things start to teeter a little bit. You're out of the playoff talks. All of a sudden you lose interest. Your fan base doesn't give a shit anymore. People tend to move on. They float to other sports. They lose interest. So I think for me, when it comes to Pierre and DJ, you know, you look at that first block of perhaps 10 games or so going into next season, the pressure is going to be on for them to perform. So as I said earlier, you have to provide some good, insulated, complimentary players this summer. You just do. And we're looking at a legitimate top six forward and perhaps even a top four defenseman. Yes, this seems to be something that most teams around the NHL are looking for, but this has been, people have been very adamant and vocal that this team is desperate for that for the past 3 years. So I think, you know, patience is starting to run very thin here. People want to see a winner. I think the expectation level is reasonable. I don't think people expect this team to be a top four team in their division, perhaps right away, but just compete, be there, be right up there in the conversation up until at least the last 10 to 20 games. And I think that'll satisfy a lot of people. The expectation level here is incredibly low right now, guys. They're not expecting a Stanley Cup every season like the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's just be in contention.
Well, that was where I was heading next. Is there's such a large gap to bridge. How could one team that's in that bottom four possibly expect to jump into the top four in the Atlantic next year? The gap between Detroit and Boston right now is 28 points. It's 37 between the Sens and fourth place. Like, can anyone close that gap in one summer? Like, I think it's almost like you need a healthy dose of reality here, in that you can complain the market can complain all they want about the GM and the coach. Like, they're also not miracle workers. Like, you know, there's not someone out there on the free agent market that you're going to be able to add that's going to help close that gap.
No, I agree. And that's going to be the challenge, right? I think when you look at, when you talk about expectations and you mention teams that they have to leapfrog. So as it stands right now, assuming Montreal gets better too, and they're in the bottom, but they're going to, like, if you're Ottawa and you're a fan, you have to look forward to Boston, Detroit, Buffalo, right off the bat, right? That 4, 5, and 6 spot. Can you leapfrog those teams? Is that a possibility for your organization? I mean, we all thought Detroit was in a serious rebuild, and they're looking pretty good right now. I mean, considering their pieces that they have. Now, the only thing I'll say about Ottawa is that they've had a ton of adversity this year. Yes, almost every team has had and gone through COVID. I am aware of that. But even more importantly with Ottawa and their goalie inconsistencies, they've had a lot of injuries. They've been incredibly thin on their back end. They were thin going into the season on defense. Then you lose Shabbat for a couple games, which they had to go through a little while back, and probably for the rest of the season now. You're really seeing how exposed that back end is. And I know the Leafs were sort of going through that for a couple seasons, where they were now on it to a different degree, of course, but they were looking for a little bit more strength and a little bit more stability back there, even in goal. Ottawa's very much in a similar situation right now, and injuries have been a huge issue. COVID was a big problem as well. So, and then of course, playing in front of no fans, like a lot of teams up here, Toronto was going through it too. That's never an easy thing either. It's hard to get up for games. So again, I know I'm using a lot of excuses. You guys probably want to puke when I'm defending Ottawa the way I am right now, but I also am a realist and I do have realistic expectations. I know where they stand right now. Do I see them being a playoff team next season? No, I don't. I think most people would be surprised if they were, but I just want to see them take a step forward. I do believe they've taken a step forward with their internal growth as far as a lot of their young core pieces like Tkachuk, Batherson, Norris, et cetera. But I think moving forward, I think fans are getting a little sick of that. They just want to see a better team on the ice.
Yeah, at some point it's going to happen. I wanted to ask you just about your experience playing in your hometown, what that was like. Back in that that run to the Eastern Conference Final, Game 7, double overtime. I was at that entire series. That was a bananas game. But I once referred to you as the yin to Erik Karlsson's yang on the Sens blue line. What's it like, you know, watching some of your former teammates? How close of tabs do you keep on them as you continue to watch games?
First of all, that season was very special for us. It's funny that we talk about it all the time, and we weren't even in the Stanley Cup final, but it was a good season. I think we surprised a lot of people during that year, and we were so close. But in any case, I keep tabs on a lot of guys. I still talk to Erik Karlsson lots, and Mark Stone and Derek Brassard and other players that I've played with that year. But it's amazing how much turnover we've had here in Ottawa since that season. And it happened quickly. I mean, understandably so, now that we're 5 years removed, I'm not shocked to see almost no players that were there. I think Nick Paul was one of the last guys that was even in the organization. He wasn't even playing at that time, but times change, and I still talk to a lot of them. They'll still reach out to me occasionally when the team makes a move, and they can give me their 2 cents on, said player. But Erik being in San Jose now, you don't really hear much about it anymore, right? I mean, he was a perennial all-star with the Ottawa Senators playing in Canada. And now that he's in San Jose, you just don't hear a whole lot anymore. And the same applies perhaps to Mark Stone, to a degree, at least. I mean, they're obviously, they've been a much better team in Vegas, but you keep in touch with guys like that. And I think as a hockey player, you don't really get to keep in touch every day or as much as you'd like, but whenever you do catch up again, it's like, it's like you were just playing yesterday. You catch right back up like you didn't miss a beat. And I miss all those guys. I certainly miss playing. My first year removed when I was retired was really hard for me. And then obviously got into this whole thing where I'm, as you mentioned earlier, I'm on the dark side now, and it keeps me busy and I'm enjoying it. But yeah, as far as communication goes with the players, I try to keep my professional life away from that. I don't want to be too much of an insider and grease info from them. It feels kind of dirty. I just stick to critiquing players and analyzing stuff that I see on the ice.
That's truly the dark side.
I know, and I wasn't poking fun at you, Frank.
As a former player,
it's hard, right?
Trust me, I get it.
Yeah.
Mark, you mentioned the veteran players and guys you played with, and you look at Cody Ceci and the player he was in Ottawa with you, and then the player he is now in Edmonton. Now, he's a prime example of, outside of the Erik Karlssons and, the Drew Doughtys and Cale Makars, the guys who step in and they're top pair guys right away. Lots of guys take time. Does Ottawa have the patience? Like, do you see guys in that organization who defensively right now might not be where the team needs them to be, but they got to stick with it? Because often you'll see teams, they give up on young defensemen 3-4 years in. We can't wait any longer. And then they look and 3 years later, like, God, we really need that guy.
Yeah. It's a fascinating sort of thing, because it happened to me. I mean, I was in Columbus, and I believe I was traded. Oh, maybe I was a little older at that point. I was closer to 28, but that was, for me at least personally, that was getting into my prime. And then I end up in Ottawa, and I was a much different player. I totally agree with that. I think teams oftentimes jump the gun a little too early when it comes to defensemen. The same could be said about goaltending, but that's a little trickier, maybe a little more gray. But with defensemen, we all know they mature much later than forwards do. And you mentioned Cody Ceci, Jason. That was a really good example of a guy that was essentially the whipping boy here in Ottawa when it came to the fan base. Yeah. They were getting fed up with him. And I oftentimes didn't understand the hate, because I played with him. He was playing huge minutes here in Ottawa with Dion Phaneuf at the time, and was a critical part of that decor that we had. And, when we're talking about Ottawa, there's a lot of talk about a young player that was essentially acquired in the trade via Mark Stone and Erik Brännström, who's currently playing in Ottawa. A lot of people probably out there where you guys are covering hockey are probably very familiar with him, but he's a highly touted prospect now playing with Ottawa. And, it's a player that admittedly I'm losing patience with, but I keep forgetting that he's only 23, and these players tend to get better with age. Now, some of the players with Ottawa, my criticism with the Ottawa Senators and their decor and a lot of the young guys is a lot of them are all the same. They're not very large bodies. They're all under 6 feet tall. Not overly offensive, not overly defensive, not necessarily power play guys. I can't really figure out what they are, and we have a lot of them here. So those are a lot of pieces potentially that the team and organization could use in trades. But to single out one player, that's sort of the problem right now, guys, is that we don't really have any significant young prospects coming up, or rather not in the lineup just yet. We have a lot of guys, journeymen. You know, we have guys like Delzato, Hamonic, Zaitsev, who you guys are familiar with, I'm sure, a little bit. Nick Holden. These are all players that I don't necessarily see in the long-term plans with the Sens. So there's a lot of work to be done there on that back end. And a lot of that happens through good drafting. And we're going to see a player like Tyler Cleven coming in from the NCAA. Jake Sanderson is another name, obviously, that we potentially could see here before the season ends. But that's going to be a work in progress. The decor is a little behind the forward group right now, and that's an area that they're going to have to address.
Hey, Jay, well, Mark, I wanted to jump in. I had a quick thing, you know, just you mentioned Cody Ceci, and I was thinking about this the other day, Mark, yeah. And I wanted your take. To me, Cody Ceci is the poster boy for how fans and the market views a player based on how much money they're making. Sure. Now, and the example I'll give you is, you know, for the last couple of years, Cody Ceci was at 4.5 his last year in Toronto. And then he goes to Pittsburgh last year at 1.25. And all of a sudden everyone goes, man, Cody Ceci's really good. Oh, yeah. It's like, it's not because Cody Ceci probably was never different in any stop that he's been at. But yeah. Now he goes from last year, oh, this guy's really good. And he's at 1.25. And now he signs a 4-year deal in Edmonton at 3.25. And all of a sudden everyone's groaning again, going, what's wrong with this guy? And it's like, he's probably just been the same exact player the whole time. Yet everyone yeah. views everyone now based on how much they make, because yeah. you have to, it's a salary cap world. Does that drive you crazy as a former player?
A little bit, but it's amazing how good of a pulse fans have on the game, right? When you think about it, like, they're aware that he's making significantly more right now, hence the criticism that follows. To me, I mean, I find that entertaining, and you're always going to get that in every sport. It's not exclusive to hockey, but yeah, it can be frustrating, and it's certainly frustrating for a player. A good example for the base here in Ottawa is a player like Colin White here with the Ottawa Senators, right winger, is making, I don't know, 4.75 right now as a third, fourth line player. He's a victim of his cap hit, and that's something that will never change. I think it happens to most players, certainly players that are maybe more role type guys that are making a little more than they maybe should be, but are liked by the organization. They sign a pretty comfy, cushy deal. And then eventually fans start, you know, being more aware of it. The numbers don't back it up, and the hate comes in. I think it's a little unfair, but it'll never change. It doesn't matter what I say as a former player on here. People are always going to be hypercritical of players that come by with a huge price tag that aren't performing at the level they expect them to. It's just part of the game.
Yeah. Well, right now, say people in Edmonton, Oilers fans, Cody Ceci's exceeded their expectations. Many were critical of the signing, and now they're like, holy geez, he's playing top pair of minutes. He's being their best right defenseman by a mile. And so he's looking as a bargain. But going back to Ottawa's defense, Mark, honestly, they need a young Mark Methot. And I don't say that to pump your tires, but I'm talking a guy who's defense. Like, you had Erik Karlsson, and Frank talked about it. Here's a guy, Mark Methot, was kill penalties, be big and strong. And in today's game, all you have to do is look at the last few years in the Stanley Cup. If you don't have a bunch of big, heavy defensemen, like, it's great to have Victor Hedman, who's a freak because he's 6'6 and is also one of the best offensive guys. But you know, you throw in the size of their defense, and I look at Ottawa. Shabbat's a dynamic player, but he needs a defenseman partner who's 6'3". Look at Jake Sanderson coming up, same thing. Is Ottawa like Zub? You know, where do you see him fitting in? And is Ottawa eventually going to have to trade somebody to go out and get some bigger defensemen?
That's a great question. I love hammering this topic home. It's tough because when you look at Shabbat, you mentioned Shabbat, he's a pretty dynamic player. The pairing that has worked since day one here in Ottawa has been with Artem Zub. Artem Zub, most people probably around the NHL are very unfamiliar with him, but he's been a terrific stay-at-home defenseman here in Ottawa. Unfortunately, they've been split up quite often because it's been so thin on the back end. Where do you find these guys? Well, oftentimes you have to draft them. I love the point you make as far as that big heavy style game that happens in the postseason, whether we like to admit it or not. And I know people go, ah, oh, there goes Mathot again. You know, obviously his bias is showing. He's a former bigger defenseman, but I don't believe in just being a big body. You have to move.
Yes.
You've got
yes.
to be able to move your feet. You know, and in today's NHL, when I'm watching games right now, my biggest thing, you know, when I'm seeing some of these players being acquired is if you're the general manager or your scout, the first thing you should be looking at is their skating ability. Just can they keep up? I'm not saying that they need to go out there and score 50 goals like Austin Matthews. No one's suggesting that. No one's suggesting that you need to have a 25-point season as a stay-at-home defenseman. Just can you complement your offensive partner and can you keep up with them? Are you a defensive liability? If you are able to keep up and you're not a liability in your own end, you're a good pickup. But I do think it is significant when you look at the past, just conference finals in general, not just the Stanley Cup winners, but the four teams that make it into those conference finals. They've got a couple bigger defensemen they can move pretty well that have a good physical presence. That's someone or rather something that I think most teams, but especially the Ottawa Senators need to go after. Now, which players are available? I'd have to look at the free agent list and take a look at who's out there right now. But, you know, size is important. And it's not just about being a big, mean, scary guy. It's having a long reach. It's breaking up 3-on-2s, breaking up rushes. You've got the reach. You're good at boxing out players at net front. You're good at making life difficult for your opponents. That's the recipe right there, really. And I firmly believe that some of the teams around the NHL are poised and are in a good spot when it comes to having those players, but it's getting your foot in the door. It's getting to the dance and in order for those players to flourish. So yes, I do agree, Jason, they need to go after some big defensemen, at least one or two players.
And as I say that, I'm going to ask the next question about a guy who's not big and he's not a defenseman, but there's lots of rumblings that in the offseason, maybe Claude Giroux comes home. Do you see that as a fit right now for Giroux or the Senators? Does it make sense?
That's such a tough question because it all comes down to the individual, right? So if you're Claude Giroux right now, well, first of all, you're experiencing one of the best markets to play in at the moment in Florida, yes. right? So it's beautiful. It's warm. The tax rate, although is insignificant for the most part in the postseason, matters big time when your paychecks are rolling in. Is Claude worried about money? Probably not. So you can probably cross that one off the list. But do you want to win at this point? Like, how hungry are you for a Stanley Cup? How do you want a Stanley Cup? Or if he does win a Stanley Cup, I could see it happening. Then he can ride off into the sunset, play in his hometown in front of his family and friends. I do know he's built a home, 5 minutes down the street from where the Sens play in Kanata. He's close. He's got a lot of friends here, which I'm aware of. He's a very social guy. He's got a big following here in Ottawa. So there's certainly going to be a lot of influence. But if I'm Claude Giroux and I don't win a Stanley Cup this season, I'm certainly going to be exploring my options elsewhere because I just know now from playing around, you know, playing in Columbus, playing in Dallas, being in other cities, there are a lot of fantastic options out there. And Ottawa, I don't think would be at the top of my list. But if you're Claude, it's obviously an option. I just don't see it happening. That's my honest answer.
I love the honesty. You've brought some of that honesty to your post-playing career now in the media. We just joked about the dark side. What have you enjoyed it? What's it been like for you? And has there been something, you know, good and bad that's been eye-opening for you in terms of the media?
It's the first year was hard. I always wanted to get into it. I didn't know what way, shape, or form it would look like, whether it was a podcast, which never even crossed my mind 5 years ago, or TV or radio, whatever it would have been. My issue initially was being critical, analyzing players, mostly players still that I've played against, and me being recently removed. It's like, you know, can I be that guy? You know, I don't want to be the guy that players are talking about in the room that, you know, I am shit talking a player and his ability to play. And it made me uncomfortable. But I think after a little time away from the game, away from playing more players, the influx of new guys that are coming into the league, it made it more easy. And then of course, Wally reaches out to me, almost what's it been now? I don't even know now how long it's been, but about a year and a half into my retirement, Brent Wallace reaches out, talks to me, pitches the idea, and I'm on board because it started local. You know, I didn't mind the idea of covering the Ottawa Senators. It was easy. It was light work. And I thought I could do that. And then of course it just sort of grew out of that. And I started doing a little more work with TSN and I'm enjoying it. I guess I underestimated the passion from some of the fans online, because I'll have a stupid hot take occasionally. Oftentimes I'm trolling. But then the outpour of let's say the Leaf fans, for example, or any other fan base that have a big base, they come in strong, and I get it pretty hard. Now I've got thick skin. I played, I'm used to the insults. But when they're coming in abundance, the way they are, it can get difficult. So you have to try to not look at all of it, have a little bit of fun with it, but, you know, keeping your eye on the ball, focusing in on all that hockey can be overwhelming at times. So you have to try to find that healthy balance between doing your job and, you know, enjoying your retirement and your time with your family and not driving your wife too crazy watching hockey all the time. So that's been a challenge. I'm enjoying it for now, at least. And, you know, if I can, for as long as I'm enjoying this job, I will continue to do it. But the moment I feel like it's just too much, I will probably peacefully back off. But for now, it's fun. I'm having a good time with Wally. I'm having a good time with TSN covering the games in Ottawa. We'll go from there.
Good. Wanted to ask you about you see your jersey over your shoulder there, the London Knights 04-05. I teased off the top, one of the best junior teams of all time. The players on that team, Corey Perry, Rob Schremp, Danny Savret, go down the list, Brandon Prust, Mark Mathot, Dan Girardi, lots of NHLers that came through that team. What'd you guys have, like 7 losses the entire year? It was incredible what you guys were able to do. So I wanted to put you on the spot. If you had 2 former teammates from that team that were to go off and start a podcast today, who would they be?
Oh man. Well, it depends, because I know Brandon Prust can be pretty polarizing online, and you know, he and I were always friends. So, you know, we had him on as a guest on our show, and we got a little bit of, I don't want to say hate, but a lot of people scoffed at that because he's got some strong opinions and views. I don't mind that. That kind of stuff usually tends to gain a lot of traction. So maybe having a guy like Brandon Prust, I'd say Corey Perry, but he's pretty monotonous behind the camera. I mean, probably one of the worst interviews out there. So I love Paris. I always pump his tires as a player. Not a good guy on camera to have. So maybe a guy like Rob Schremp or Danny Savret paired with a player like Brandon Prust, I could see something working there. It would be a type of show you wouldn't want to read the comments on, but I'm sure the views would be pretty good.
I like that. Mark, we always like to end with rapid fire. The only rule is you have to answer the question.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. What impressed you most playing with Erik Karlsson?
His casual approach to the game, despite him being one of the most dynamic players of all time. Him eating hot dogs in Montreal before a Montreal Canadiens game, coming from a guy who is a health freak like myself, was astonishing and cringing at the same time, yet he'd go out there and have an incredible night. So his ability to just be such a freak on ice, despite his off-ice habits, to me, impressed me the most.
If he hadn't had the Achilles injury, how much do you think that's impacted him?
Big time. I think it has. And I think he would deny it. But I think that's just a credit to his ability to respond to, playing with a lot of adversity. I mean, that Achilles injury was significant. It could be the kiss of death for a lot of people. Eric's had an ability to play beyond that. Is he the same player now? You can make an argument at times that he is. Obviously, he's lost a little bit of step. Most players do when they get older, but very special player. I've got nothing but positive stuff to say of Erik Karlsson.
Are you still a health freak? Do you monitor what you eat?
I try to, but I have shoulder problems, back problems, knee problems. I think that's mostly why I'm so cognizant of my body and why I work out so much and eat properly, because if I let myself go, I will not be able to move. So that's something that I think a lot of people don't really appreciate with a lot of pro athletes, is that we're borderline crippled after our careers, and it can be very hard to manage.
What is your favorite cheat meal?
Pizza, no question, pizza, and lots of mushrooms. My wife hates it, but I load on the mushrooms and cheese. Probably once every 2 weeks, I'll pound a whole pizza to myself.
Pineapple on pizza?
No, and I would put a gun to your head if you did that in front of me.
What is your go-to cocktail of choice?
Whitewater beer. That's a free plug. Or truthfully, Pinot Noir. I love red wine. probably have a glass every evening with my dinner while I'm cooking. That would be my go-to.
When you played, which forward was the toughest one for you to defend?
Pavel Datsyuk, absolutely up there. Sidney Crosby, up there. Players like Ovechkin, I never found that difficult to play against because they're pure shooters. But the guys that were really good setup players, very strong bases. Crosby's got massive quads, legs, lower body, hard to hit off the puck. Same with Datsyuk. Those are the types of players to me that were always hard to play against.
Unheralded defensive defenseman in today's game that you're a huge fan of.
Oh, Pelech.
Oof. I thought you were going to say Gavrikov.
or Labushkin. No, I'll say Pelech.
Pelech. How often do you troll Maple Leafs fans for your own pure enjoyment?
Not often enough, but if I do it too often at that frequency, then it loses its luster. So I pick my spots about once a month. I like to rile them up big time. And then all the little Austin Matthews avatars and Mitch Marner avatars come after me, the Leaf season guys with the hashtags. And I have to weather the storm for about 24 to 48 hours and then it goes away.
Have you ever thought about turning off your mentions?
No, I love it. I don't know what that says about me in my day to day and how bored I probably really am, but I enjoy the banter and I love the pushback. Bring it on.
Right now, who is your Stanley Cup favorite?
This is going to be a hot take. Well, maybe not so hot, but I'm still leaning on Tampa. I know they're trickling away a little bit, but I mean, they know how to win. They've got the experience. We talked a little bit about this prior to the show too. I'm more curious as far as postseason goes. I want to see what the Maple Leafs can do. Can they pass the first round? My eyes are on them.
In 5 years from now, so start of next season, over the next 5 years, who is going to have combined most points for the Ottawa Senators the next five seasons?
I'm going to go with Drake Batherson. He's been injured. He's back now. I'm going to go with Drake Batherson.
Love the Drake. Good Seinfeld reference there. Mark, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Mark Mathot, good guy. Very well-spoken former player. And I loved his honesty about Corey Perry. You know, like Corey Perry is kind of a rat on the ice. And so you'd think he'd be a good chirper off of it, but his own teammates say maybe not. So plus, you know, who knows if that's something he'd want to do. But, you know, Mathot's been good. I like that he admits it. Hey, some days you just have some fun, you know, getting after the fan bases. It's, you know, Toronto, Ottawa have a pretty good rivalry on the ice and definitely off of it. And you know, I'm curious about that organization, Frank, and where it's going to go here in the future, you know, because ownership is key to any successful organization. I'm a big believer. If you have good ownership with a good direction plan, you got a much better chance of success.
Well, you need hands-off ownership. And I think that was always one of the big complaints about the Ottawa Senators was just that Eugene Melnyk was involved in almost everything, whether it was, you know, transactions, payroll, communications. Like there was a lot of different areas that he touched. There wasn't anything that he didn't control. And that was always the criticism was let your people do the work. You know, that's the beauty of someone like Jeff Vinnick in Tampa. Provide every resource imaginable and then go back and sit back and enjoy it as a fan. Wear your jersey to the game and have a beer and enjoy it. That's really what the point should be. And you know, I think that was lost a little bit of times. And I think the reason for that, it's not a negative, is that he was so into it. He was so passionate about trying to win. So yeah, I think that's certainly gonna stick out. By the way, you know, I asked that specific question about the podcast. We've been working on a little something. I can't reveal anything more, but we do have two former players from that team working on a project. Could be the next Daily Faceoff podcast to join the network. So I wanted to see if he would hit on the guys that I was thinking. And he definitely nailed some of them. So that's a good sign.
I don't want to tease it either, but I have a good idea. So we'll for a future date on the broadcast. Frank, have yourself a great weekend. You know, some playoff races in the West. The LA Kings just keep rolling despite all their injuries, making it tough on Vegas and Edmonton and, you know, in Dallas. So we'll see what happens. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.